The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions or positions of anyone at Innovative Sim Solutions or our sponsors. Welcome to the Sim Cafe, a podcast produced by the team at Innovative Sim Solutions, edited by Shelley Hauser. Join our host, Deb Tauber, and co-host, Jared Jeffries, as they sit down with subject matter experts from across the globe to reimagine clinical education and the use of simulation. So pour yourself a cup of relaxation, sit back, tune in, and learn something new from the Sim Cafe. Healthcare Simulation Middle East is a 501c public benefit nonprofit organization registered in the United States. Its mission is to facilitate learning, advance knowledge, mobilize resources, and champion adoption of simulation-based health science education. Healthcare Simulation Middle East carries out the mission through publications, content creation, and the dissemination of knowledge towards the simulation-based health sciences education. Connect with them today.
Welcome to another episode of the Sim Cafe. I'm Deb Tauber. I'm here with my co-host, Jared Jeffries, and we are live at IMSH. Thank you so much. We have here Jenny Calzada, and welcome. And why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Thank you. So normally I'm the director of simulation at Tulane School of Medicine in New Orleans.
Wow.
But in relation to the society, I'm in my going into my third year on the board of directors, and I'm also chairing the SSH Fund campaign for 2023, which we just launched on Sunday. So brand new effort. It's a philanthropic arm of the society, the first time we've ever done that. And our goal is to raise $200,000 in 2023, that in 2024 we'll use to fund larger research projects, some tech innovation grants. We will continue to fund the Beverly Anderson's needs-based scholarship and actually expand that to have more funding, especially for our international attendees. And then also the Chad Epps Fund to continue his legacy.
Thank you for doing that. Thank you for your service to the society.
Thank you.
How many IMSHs have you been to?
My first one was in 2009, which actually was in Orlando then, but on Disney property.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a lot. We've far outgrown those type of locations.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had been in that job for about 6 weeks when I went to IMSH. Maybe 2 months. Didn't even know what IMSH was. I think 90% of what I heard went over my head, but I've definitely made lifelong friends here, and honestly, these are the people that really taught me to do my job, because I was hired when the Sim Center was built at Tulane, so no one knew anything about it. We had nothing. There were no policies, no curriculums, no nothing, and there wasn't really anyone to help me because no one had ever done it before. So
right, so you're really a pioneer out there.
And I also think that all 90%, that's the same for everybody's first
time. 90% is like, I feel like that's important, but I'm not really sure what I just heard. Yeah.
What else would you like our listeners to know?
So talking about the fund, it's important because we really can't make huge strides and changes and advances in this industry each on our own. We really have to do it together. Now, previously, the Society has funded research, but it's been for early career awards, so, which is great, get people started. But they're capped at $10,000. And while that's a great project, we're not going to make transformational strides and fill the knowledge gap on simulation and validating it, especially its connection to patient safety. We really need larger awards for that. We need experienced researchers doing that. And we really need multi-institutional research to do that, to really show that, yes, this was not a one-off. This really does work. And that's just not something the society can really fund to that level. If we did, we'd have to raise costs, and we don't want to do that, because that affects everyone across the board equally. So this is our 24th year. There's a lot of people who've spent their careers in this field. They've really been very successful, and this is their chance to give back and like help push us all forward.
So that means next year is going to be the 25-year anniversary.
I think it's the 24th IMSH. I could be wrong. I should know this. I guess I should know this. I think it's the 24th IMSH.
Okay. Yeah. Is there anything you want to ask us or anything else you want to share? And how would our listeners go ahead and donate to these?
So they can go to sshfund.org. I will say the website's a little bare bones right now. We've been in a six-month sprint to really get us to this point. But we are, and also all the staff, I mean, obviously they've been working on IMSH. And this is, I mean, it's the largest ever, the most attendance, the most exhibitors, which means it's been the most work to actually pull this off. And that really needed to be their focus. So once this is over and they've all had a break, a week off, we'll get back to really putting more of those messages online, having a much larger web presence where people can get information. But we've also taken advantage of the fact that, you know, many people are here in person. And we've been filming testimonials from board members, other key leaders, but also past recipients of research awards and the needs-based scholarships, talking about the impact that it had for them personally in their career. And those are all things, I mean, that's what really helps convince people that, hey, if you can give $100, it's worth it. Because look at this person who's never attended IMSH because their institution couldn't afford it. And they were able to come, and this had a tremendous impact on their career. I mean, that's doing a lot for someone.
All right. Anything else you want to ask us? Jared, do you have any questions?
No, this is wonderful, and I appreciate your perspective, because I think that for our listeners to gain a glimpse from your side is such a rarity, and so appreciate you sharing your voice and your experience of what all it takes to go forward, and also the vision for not only 2023, but 2024.
Yeah, I mean, in 2024, we'll be announcing, you know, obviously how much we raised in 2023. Yeah. You know, and things like this, when you launch, it probably takes a year to really get going. Some people kind of hold off and want to see, like, what's going to happen with this. But especially next year when we're awarding things and we're talking about, you know, what big research projects are getting money, tech innovations, that's when people will really get excited, because then they'll really see the outcomes and like, oh, that's what my money went to? Like, wow, that's great. So that's when people really... So hopefully the momentum goes even higher next year. Because especially with the scholarships, our hope is to really expand that. And it's... The travel stipend has never changed since those have been given out, and it's $1,000. And if you're international in a low-resource country, that... $1,000 isn't even going to cover your airfare,
right,
much less hotel and all the other costs.
Yeah. Right.
And when Julie Maxworthy in her presidency made the tiered pricing, this now goes along with that.
Mm-hmm.
So we now have tiered pricing for people from those low-resource countries. We can also have more opportunities to bring them here in person. Because if you've been here, you know the impact of being here in person is entirely different than just being a member from afar and being on a couple webinars and looking on the website.
Yeah.
And I think it's those connections.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, you make those connections. And, you know, like during the pandemic is when I started the podcast. And having had been at prior conferences, I had a big post-it, one of those great big post-it notes, and I wrote down people I was going to ask. And I reached out to them, and they said, yes, I'll be on your podcast. I was like, really?
Yeah. I think people were desperate to talk to other people too, but yeah.
I think everyone has a story, though. I think that's where it starts. Is we all have a story.
Mm-hmm.
People, we're all human, and
yeah. But yeah, networking here, I always tell people when you come, they're like, don't pack your schedule with nonstop sessions. I mean, yes, they're great, and you will learn a lot, but the networking can be equally important.
Certainly.
I mean, there's multiple people that I've met through this who I now collaborate on different projects that we do, and sometimes it was just from randomly meeting them here over the years.
Dawn, yeah.
One of them. Dawn and I have done multiple projects together.
Yeah.
We'll be at AAMC together later this year.
Yep.
So, yeah.
And it's Dawn Spodarsky we're talking about.
Actually, both Dawns I've done a lot with. So I've done projects with both of them.
Yeah.
Dawn Schocken and Dawn Spodarsky.
They're both wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful, wonderful, yes. Wonderful.
D squared.
Yep. Anything else you want to add?
No, I mean, that's kind of been my main role here is pushing out the fund and getting everybody being unabashful and in everyone's face about it. But
you got to start somewhere.
That's what you got to do. That's what you got to do.
Yeah. One foot in front of the other. So.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you very much and happy simulating.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks to Jenny Calzada from the SSH Board of Directors, who's chairing this year's IMSH Philanthropic Group. Up next, James Archetto from GMARD sits down with Deb and Jared. Stay tuned. There's more to learn.
Welcome to another episode of the Sim Cafe. We're here with Jared Jeffries, our co-host, and I'm Deb Tauber, and today we are so fortunate to have James Archetto from GMARD. Thank you for being here and joining us.
Oh, thanks, Deb. It's great to be here. What a terrific conference it's been this week. We've been just thrilled at the response and the support from SSH. Terrific week.
Has GMARD been performing in the past couple IMSHs given the pandemic, or is this kind of back in full force for you guys?
We worked through the pandemic, actually, that in 2021, well, it was completely virtual at that point, and we participated there. And then last year, of course, we were back in full force working through. And here, it seems like everyone came back because they had been away for so long. So it was great to see all of the attendees being here.
Yeah, and you see the difference of how, I don't want to use the word mature, but how much it's grown from, you know, maybe a conference that might not have been so attended versus where we are.
There's no doubt that the conference has grown, and the engagement, too, of the attendees. Everyone was so engaged and so hungry to learn and to see what's been going on for the past 2 years. What have my colleagues been up to? And to see that engagement was really exciting.
We just had, a Congress member?
We did, yes. So we had representatives from local congressional offices and Senator Mark Rubio's office and Senator Rick Scott's office. And, of course, us being based here in Florida, they're very enthusiastic about seeing what we had. So the simulators they saw at our booth were Pediatric HAL. And we talked a lot about engagement and how important it is for an immersive learning experience for the learners, whether they're attending physicians, nurses, or students, to be really engaged in that learning. And Pediatric HAL, of course, cries real tears. His head moves, and you know, he asked, "Where's Dad?" And I was able to console him a little bit. He stopped crying. Then we moved over to our new Advanced HAL, our most sophisticated simulator, and we talked a lot about the artificial intelligence that he uses and how we use mixed reality, because learners have different needs now than they had years ago. And we learned this through COVID. How can we get learners to really understand what's taking place? So we invested heavily in different methodologies and modalities of education and using mixed reality, because the tactile component is critical in medical education. At the same time, what can we do? And the Microsoft HoloLens allows them to see what's taking place. And the specific example that we showed was a hemothorax. So we created the clinical condition in the simulator of a hemothorax. We had the Microsoft HoloLens, so the folks from the senators and representatives' offices were actually able to see what blood looks like around the lung, and then we had ultrasound so they can see what that looks like as well. And then they actually delivered a baby using Victoria.
Go figure.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, of course, our roots in maternal health.
And how long have you guys been using the Microsoft HoloLens?
We started, I believe, in 2018. And the first one was Victoria with the Microsoft OBMR. We call it OBMR, obstetric MR.
But that's the fascinating thing for me is you've seen this technology growth from outside industry players, which, of course, you partner with and really have the sound. But you know, Microsoft, Google, Apple, or whatever.
Right.
They're solid players. They know what they're
doing.
Yes,
exactly.
So it's great to see that being brought into the healthcare simulation.
And here at the conference, we had the global program manager of a Microsoft HoloLens at our exhibit booth.
Oh, wow.
Looking to see what we're doing. How can we do it? How can Microsoft help us.
Yeah.
And you can imagine, you know, in simulation, we're a well-represented company. Compared to Microsoft, we're rather tiny.
Help me help you.
Right. And the number of HoloLenses or even Surface Pros that we purchase on an annual basis is tiny compared to Best Buy or some of their other customers. So the fact that the Microsoft program manager recognized what we were doing and was at our exhibit booth was quite powerful for us. So this has been a great show in a lot of ways. To see, as I mentioned earlier, the engagement of the attendees. This is the first time that we've had congressional representation at one of our conferences.
Yeah.
They didn't know what we do. And to have them here, we had a private meeting with them earlier, and then for them to come to our exhibit booth and see what we do with simulators made right here in Florida was really powerful.
Extremely special.
Yeah, really powerful.
Mm-hmm. And I've been to the home base.
Yes,
I was actually
have.
There, mm-hmm. and I can tell you that my first delivery was on a Gemmark simulator.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a real highlight of my career when mm-hmm. I was able to deliver a baby in the simulation center.
How about that? And they were, the congressional representatives were stunned at how realistic it is. But it has to be that realistic. It can't be pushing a doll through a box anymore. It's a mom who's saying the baby's coming, and the baby comes, and the baby comes, and it's crying. I mean, this is pretty realistic. And she had to feel the cervix dilating, and then she grabbed the baby, and she delivered the placenta. So it was that level of realism, which, of course, they've never experienced before.
Yeah.
So this has been a really good show for us, and we're thrilled to be part of SSH and to be here at this conference.
And we appreciate the support for everything you're doing here.
Thank you.
And so, as we've unpacked a lot here with technology and embedding and going through your high-fidelity patient simulation, is where do you see the future of simulation going in the next 3 to 5 years?
You know, we talk a lot about technology, and certainly we embrace technology, but the technology is the means of the outcome. Mm-hmm. The outcome for us always is ensuring competency for the next generation of learners. That's the goal. The question is, how do you get there? During COVID, how are we going to get there when people can't touch our simulators? People are learning, as I mentioned earlier, with headsets, with virtual reality, with games. How are we going to make someone a more competent midwife? And how can we use technology to get to that point? How can we allow someone to be a more competent cardiologist? With simulation. How can we help a nurse with basic patient care? Let's look at the demographics of the U.S. The U.S. now ranks 37th in maternal and neonatal birth. It's terrible. We can do better than that. How can we as a supplier help? We have an aging population. When we look at how population ages, now we have physical and mental challenges. How can we help? We look at cardiovascular disease. How can we assist with that? So those are the things that we look at. So it's technology towards an end, which is competency and care. As long as we keep that in mind, everything else is just used to get there. And ensuring that these learners and these new medical students, nursing students, midwives, and even attendings, you know, nurses who have been in practice 20 years, things are changing. You know, we have a diverse American population. How are we going to address that? We need to be reflective of that with the product that we provide. So we look at a lot. How is the industry changing? Certainly we'll use technology, but as I mentioned, we look at technology as a means to an end, competency.
And that's great that, you know, Gemmark being one of the driving forces, that is the focus instead of the opposite.
Right. Technology just is a way to get there.
Is there anything you want to ask us?
We're thrilled with what SSH has done. So the conference this year, we had someone who was new with our company at our exhibits for the first time. And that person asked, hey, how does this compare? You've been here a lot of years. How does this compare? And this is the best one we've been to. The conference keeps advancing. The society keeps progressing. Little things that you don't think of. We go to plenty of conferences. Mm-hmm. There are many conferences that have lunch for the attendees, but not for the exhibitors. Right. Okay, well, you know, exhibitors are here and invest heavily in this conference. So it's just really nice to have water and lunch and coffee and here in the exhibit hall. Number one, it draws people in, which is what we need. But number two, we get hungry and thirsty too. So it's nice to be included in that and that the society is inclusive of that. As I mentioned earlier, it was great to have congressional representation here to really understand that it's well understood that airplane pilots need to have simulation before they fly a commercial airliner. Mm-hmm. It should be that way in simulation too. As representatives of us, of taxpayers and constituents, you need to be spending on simulation. And education is always the first thing to get cut.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how could education help patients in the U.S.? If an airliner crashes, we all hear about it. We don't hear about all those patients that have died because it's one here and one there over time. But we know the impact of simulation on patient care. So that needs to be invested in as well, and it can't be cut from budgets.
Thank you, and thank you for everything you guys are doing at Gamera.
My pleasure, Devin. Thanks for you and Jared and what the Society has done for us. We appreciate that. It's a great partnership.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Happy simulating.
Healthcare Simulation Middle East. Connect with them on social media platforms or their website through publications and content creation to learn more about simulation health science education. Thanks for joining us here at the Sim Cafe. We hope you enjoyed. Connect with us at www.innovativesimsolutions.com. And be sure to hit that like and subscribe button so you never miss an episode of the Sim Cafe.